Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we will go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Swick Enterprises, we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 140-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at GridironGreatsMagazine.com. We're sponsored in part by MSB Sports Cards. Check out their website for one of the largest selection of football cards and memorabilia on the web at MSBSportsCards.com. And we're also sponsored in part by BSD Auctions. Check out their website, BSDAuctions.com, and make sure you register for the next upcoming auction, soon to be held. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my guest co-host, who's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian who has an advanced collection of football cards and memorabilia. He hails from Virginia. I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Jeff Payne. Jeff, welcome to the show this evening.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. I see you promoted me to senior contributing author of the magazine last time. I didn't get to comment on that. I'm wondering if that comes with new business cards or something, or anything I can get for that.
For the senior contributing writer?
Yeah.
Get them.
Yeah, I used to just be contributing writer. Now you bumped me up in pay grade. I'm pretty excited about that.
The last couple articles, I think, put you on the upper echelon
the
of football card research. So that's quite an increase, to say the least. But I'll tell you, it's only been a few days since we talked recently, and we actually didn't even get through everything we were going to talk about. But I got a few comments on the show after, and they just couldn't believe what's involved in your collection. And I said I was very honored that you're able to come on as a guest co-host to fill in for our regular co-host, Joe Squires, who is currently in Australia. I had a chance to text Joe early this morning, and he is doing fine, and he's wishing everyone here well. And he is also wishing you well in your guest co-host position, and he just hopes he has a job when he gets back. And I told him he should be able to. But, Jeff, I do appreciate you being filling in for Joe. They're big very big shoes to fill, to say the least. But I want to get right into some discussion before we have our guests come on tonight. What are some of the interesting items that we've seen come to auction recently? There's a bunch of auction houses that have had some very, very interesting items, to say the least. What's your take on, and what have you seen go through the market, let's say, over the past few months?
Yeah, well, the first thing is got to be BST auction. I know you and Joe talked about this auction when it was going on, and you had Mike Blaisdell on the show, whose collection, part of his collection, was in the recent BST auction. Just a phenomenal amount of great football stuff. I mean, to give anybody out there that wasn't tracking the auction a perspective, usually in an auction, you know, since I have all the mainstream cards, I'm looking for oddball food products. I'm looking for memorabilia. Usually when an auction hits, and I try to, you know, peruse them all at least to look at what's out there, I'll put in 5 to 10 opening bids just so I've got a placeholder seat at the table, so to speak. So in case I really want to focus on something, I can bid on it later. I counted up. I went through BST, and I only put stuff on things I don't have, right? I went through and did that in BST. I look back. I put 52 bids in on the BST auction. And good thing there's other bidders is all I can say, because if I had won all that, I'd be like mortgaging my home. So but there was just so much incredible one-of-a-kind or low rare pop, you know, low pop rare cards in that auction. It was incredible. And some great mainstream sets too, or top or cards as well. I'm sure you saw that there were some PSA 8, you know, high grade, nice rookie cards, a Jim Brown PSA 8. There was a Bart Starr and a Unitas that all went for a pretty decent amount of money in the BST auction. You know, it is interesting, though, that if you look at the prices for the Hall of Famers, rookie cards, they've come down considerably in the last couple of years over what they were.
Let me throw this question out before we go any further. What's your take on that? Why do you think, a couple of people have asked me about that, and I've given my own opinion, but I'm curious to hear what you think about it.
Yeah, well, we always say that cards kind of go with the economy. This is clearly not that case, because the economy is rolling along, the stock market's rolling along, and these cards are not rolling along. My sense is that, you know, part of it, you know, being a little bit paranoid, I got to wonder about the validity of some of those bids and some of those results. You know, I'm not accusing anybody of shilling or cards going for prices and then not really changing hands or any shenanigans or people holding prices because they own one, any of that stuff. But I don't know how to explain it otherwise, because nothing changed other than, you know, mid-2014, all of a sudden, all of the Hall of Fame rookie cards shot through the roof. Now, of course, it might just be a case of there were, you know, 3, 4, 5 hardcore, you know, Hall of Fame collectors who moved into the market, you know, collecting rookie cards, and maybe they were butting heads against each other consistently. But, you know, the prices, you know, they were like tripling in a couple of months, and they stayed at that level for a good year and a half, and then they dropped right back down to where they were, you know, 4 years ago. So maybe some shenanigans, or just maybe some people with, you know, discretionary funding that all decided to get into the rookie card, high grade rookie card game at the same time. And the prices shot up considerably during that period of time. What do you think?
Well, the one thing I've thrown out to several people that I'm very close to in the hobby, and, you know, you just take it for what it's worth, Castellan and the Hunt collection, did that really run up prices? And I'm very curious about it, because, again, it seems like they cornered the market on a few cards. And, again, they had the money to put into the cards because they did want the number one collection. And pretty much it is a pretty extreme collection, to say the least. But I'm wondering if that had a very strong influence right at that time as they were building the collection. And, again, if you look at our hobby, you know, again, who are we competing, you know, the real advanced collectors, who are they competing against? They pretty much know who they're buying against, you know, especially if it's a rare oddball card, or let's say it's a Shotwell, or it's a Spalding, whatever it may be. You got a pretty strong idea who you're going up against. But is it a situation now with the rookie cards, you know, could have been the Hunt influence into the market? Could it be people are finally recognizing that football cards are undervalued, so they're going to get into the market, you know, where they feel comfortable in paying for the cards? Or, again, Is it just a question that people overbid on it because they needed to have it? And like you're saying, you know, the 3 to 5 guys who are trying to run that Hall of Fame, you know, grade as high as possible, they're willing to pay anything that they can just to get it type of situation. So it's a tough call, and I really believe it needs to be analyzed a little more clearly, especially if you're one of those people trying to buy those cards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and as somebody who feels like they missed out on the kind of the not high grade, but pretty decent grade Hall of Fame rookie cards, because that was something that when I was getting back into the hobby, I considered, you know, focusing some attention on and decided to pass. You know, I was kicking myself when the prices started really going up because I was like, well, shoot, are these ever going to come back down where they're going to be affordable again?
Right.
Now they are getting affordable again for whatever reason. But, yeah, I can see what you're saying. I understand and think that might have had something to do with it. It certainly bumped it up, and the prices stayed up there. I also heard stories of, you know, overseas investors, a few people who are in the hobby mentioned that there were some overseas people who were looking at it as an investment opportunity and got into the hobby really from just an investment point of view. I don't know if they stayed or they sold, you know, riding it up and then selling off before it went down. I don't know, but I've heard stories of that as well.
Right. Right, I've heard that for the past five, six years now, that there are overseas buyers in the market. And again, I'm sure there are one way or the other. But at the same time, you know, to me, some of the prices that were realized a few years back to me were utterly ridiculous. I couldn't see how they can be maintained. You know, and I think this is proving it. You know, starting that softness in the market, starting to see that minor correction. I myself am comfortable because, as you know, being the dinosaur that I am, I own very few graded cards. So my Jimmy Brown rookie card is the same Jimmy Brown rookie card I've had for probably 30 years now. My Unitas rookie card is the same. The Star is the same, so on and so forth. And you know, compared to what I see slab, I got my cards for pennies on the dollar. You know what I mean? So I'm comfortable with what I have. But at the same time, again, somebody who desires a PSA 7, a PSA 8, a PSA 9, they sometimes may think illogically and just, you know, if they got the cash, to say, hey, I'm going for it. I'm gonna pay whatever I have to in the market and run it up. So
yep.
I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing for the hobby. But again, you know, I'm on the sidelines looking at this just as you are, and it. You know, in a way, it concerns me, and in a way, it's probably the best thing that could ever happen for the hobby to see that kind of money in the hobby at the same time.
Right.
So it's a tough call either way. I also got to throw out one point with the last two BST auctions. Anybody who got the printed catalog from those auctions, by all means, please hold on to that in your collection, because that is probably going to be one of the best reference tools you're going to have in looking and seeing at those items, because to me, as far as the Beckett book is concerned, you don't have that kind of display, you don't have that kind of picture, you don't have that kind of write-up on those cards as you did in the BSC auction catalogs. And to me, it's a historical catalog, and don't throw it out, whatever you do. You know, don't put it in the recycling bin or whatever. Make sure that's on your football card bookshelf there, because it's essential reading, to say the least. Anything else did you see lately, Jeff?
Yeah, a couple rare things came up on BST that I thought were really cool. You know, I'm sure Joe was all over the 1949 Leaf uncut sheet that came up, the football uncut sheet. That was just phenomenal. Went for over $4,700. Just a beautiful example of a very rare, hard-to-find uncut sheet. That was really cool. And then that football exhibit checklist with Chuck Bignarik on it that I know you and Joe talked about, that went for way more than I expected it would. I know it's the only one known to exist, but there are a few kind of thinner versions of it out there.
Right.
There's some skepticism about it. And is it legit, or is it one of the thin ones that got pasted on cardboard? Nobody knows for sure, but it's a phenomenal item, and it went for like $4,500.
Yeah, well, that
completely blew me out of the water.
to me, that one is the real deal. I mean, that coming from Mike's collection, that's the real deal. That's not a I know what you're talking about. And I've seen them, the thin ones where they would just take the photo or the poster at that time and then paste it over the cardboard, which was very common at that time. And I would venture to say that piece in existence today, how many pieces exist, I don't know. I don't have a handle. But even originally when they were printed, I don't think a lot of those were printed in the beginning. I really don't. I think they were few and far between, and those were exceptionally rare, to say the least. And I'll tell you, I was comfortable seeing the price on that. I said to myself, that's probably what it's worth, as far as I'm concerned. That's rare.
It was beautiful. You know? In fact, you're right. I mean, I know there were some collectors that didn't run it up because they were worried that perhaps it wasn't legit. Who knows what?
Right.
If they had gotten that graded, and maybe because it's a one of a kind, it's the kind of thing that the grading companies aren't going to touch because they don't have any way to really verify it. But if you could ever determine that it was legitimate, I think you're right. And in fact, I think that's a deal. If you could ever prove that it was legitimate, maybe you saw an advertisement or something. If one of those things ever comes up that demonstrates that it's legit, and you could get it graded, the price of that thing would skyrocket.
Right. Well, and looking at it, and not looking at it physically, but looking at it for the catalog and seeing some pictures that were sent to me, I just said, this is rare of rare. And in all the years I've been in football, I've never seen anything like that. So it was an amazing piece, to say the least. So I thought that was great. All right, wrapping it up. We're going to have to move on because our guest is here. And at this time, I'd like to introduce our special guest tonight, who is a longtime super collector of football cards and memorabilia, someone who I've known and traded cards with for probably over 25 years now. And we also visit and have a good conversation at the National Sports Collectors Convention each year. He hails from Michigan. I'd like to introduce super football collector, Mr. Mike Rich. Mike, welcome to the show this evening.
Thanks, Bob. Great to talk to you again and hear all this interesting stuff from you and Jeff. So,
just to let the audience know, again, I've known Mike probably over 25 years. We traded many, many years ago, and we haven't stopped trading since. Talked about a lot of different things over the years, the hobby, and I'm very happy to have you on the show. Now, I'm going to put you right on the spot with our first question. How'd you get into collecting, and in particular football cards, as I know you collect all four major team sports?
Right. Well, like, you know, most kids, during summers, we'd go out and play Little League baseball and whatnot, and as the seasons changed, in my area, it was flag football and whatnot. So I had started collecting cards. Very funny anecdote. I have two younger sisters, and my parents learned at a young age that for 5 cents a day, they could have the world's greatest babysitter. And that was the true story that, you know, we go out, you know, summer vacation, whatever, and you get up in the morning, you go out and play all day until you're called home for lunch, you go out after lunch until you're called home for dinner, and go out until you're called home for, you know, bath or bedtime. Well, my parents learned that if they gave me a pack of cards after dinner every day, I'd be a good kid. So it was dependent upon my receiving the pack of cards was dependent upon neither of my sisters tattling on me or any of the neighbors calling up and complaining. So the days I didn't get a pack, the very next day I was the most angelic kid in the neighborhood. The neighbors would be calling up my mom and call them off. We don't need help taking our groceries in. I don't need help crossing the street. So I would get a pack of cards after dinner almost every day. And, you know, like most kids, you know, you end up having a few short prints you needed and this or that. And I'd start going to, we had local card shops back in the day. And I would try to fill it in. And I was starting, you know, as the seasons changed, the football cards started coming in. And I started saying, hey, you know, I play flag football. I watch football on TV. Let's do the football card. And because the baseball had all these short prints and the sets were so big and the superstars were so expensive for a kid, the football sets were fantastic. I could get them at the time. This is the late 60s, early 70s type thing, for a couple cents a card. Mm-hmm. I have a paper route. I make $10 a week. I could go out and get 300 cards for 10 bucks. It was fantastic. And so with the smaller sets, the superstars not costing as much, and no short prints. I didn't know about 1972 high numbers for a little while yet.
Join the club on that one. Awesome.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. So I started, you know, doing the football sets because they were much more affordable, and I could complete them. We had a shop. It was about 45 minutes from my house. And my mom would drive me out there about once a month. And this guy would let me sit there on the floor in his back room and go through. And I saw these 1965 Topps football, these taller cards, you know, the tall boys, which I had never seen before. What are these? Why are they not the same size as the regular standard cards? So being an oddball person, these oddball cards really attracted me. And he was selling to me 65 Topps football for 3 cents a card. I think my name had cost me $5. Wow. I still have my name at the $5.
Wow. Well,
that's 40 some odd years ago.
That was big money.
It really was, you know? And,
that's incredible.
That really got me into it. And,
that's a great story, Mike. That's the way collecting was meant to be done. You know, kudos to you for putting that together. And so much like so many collectors and how we got started. What's in your football card collection? What runs are you working on? Sets? I mean, tell us a little bit more about specifically what you're focusing on. And do you have a certain run you're going after or particular sets? I mean, how do you go about, you know, collecting football?
Right. Well, I am a set builder. I like getting the complete sets. So, you know, I started with Topps. The Kellogg's cards came out while I was still a kid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a whole lot of Frosted Flakes later. I had my 70 and 71 Kellogg's football.
You got them all through boxes?
No, I had to get some at shows and through trading.
That's impressive, though.
And, you know, I'm fortunate. As Bob mentioned, we've been trading now through the mail for over 25 years. Huh. And I'm an active online trader with folks. My email is mikesportsfan@aol.com. And people just Google my want list, Mike Rich want list, and all my wants show up. And I've been trading all these years to try and finish my sets. But I started with the Topps. And I've been working my way back. I finished the 51 Topps on up. I do vintage cards, so pre-1980. I finished the Topps from 51 on up and working on the 1950 Topps football, which a lot of people don't even realize exists, the average collector, not the serious collectors. And I got about two-thirds of that set done now. And I've got some of the 1948 Topps Magic football. Still need some of those to work on that. The Bowman football, I'm down to one last card to complete the Bowman football run.
Which is?
The 52 Bowman Large Stittaher. It's one of the extreme short prints in the set.
Yep.
Number 99, you got it. You know, now, if
99.
It was Wayne Gretzky, I'd understand. But Stittaher?
Yeah.
But
crazy,
you know,
isn't it?
The cards divisible by nine in the 52 Bowman Large are very tough to find, and that one is you know, in the Langsford number 144, the last card in the set, whew, very, very tough cards to get. So,
you know, all the years I've been going to shows, and I still have the number 99 on your want list that I look for. I still haven't seen anything here on the East Coast. That's amazing. This is truly amazing. That is a hard
short prints are tough.
That is a difficult card to find. Okay, Mike, keep going.
And the fun part is I'm a pure collector. So like Bob, I have a few graded cards in my collection that I obtained when they were graded and I've left them that way, yes. But I don't grade cards. And I've always divided cards up into sharp, acceptable, and trashed. And I'm just looking for acceptable, generally speaking. You know, a nice VG card that presents well. You know, maybe it showed someone loved it for a while, you know, put a little crease in it or something handling it. Are just fine with me. And the fact that I can't find a Stitterher tells you just how tough a card it is. And Bob and I have helped each other out with our 48 leaf football, the high number short prints. And Bob, I helped you finish yours, right?
Yep, you finished my set back in two. And I'm going to point out the year. It was 2006 that trade took place.
Wow, you remember that.
Okay. Yep, yep.
So
I write everything down. So.
Oh, okay.
That was a brutal last card to find. Couldn't find it anywhere, and we were on the phone or whatever. He said, "Oh yeah, I got one. I'll send it to you. No problem." So
was that Navellini?
I'm sorry.
So who was that? Was that Leo Navellini to finish your set? Yeah. So I'm still working on the high numbers. I'm down to about 15 of them. Of course, I finished the 49 set. And I don't have the variations in the 48s either, you know, with the sleeves and the different colors and that. I haven't gotten to that point yet. But I am working, you know, on the leaf football to go with it. And then the set that I refer to as my one a year, you know, the main pre-war set, the Mayo Cut Plug originals are out of my price range. But the National Chickle. The 1935 National Chickle. My goal I set about 10 years ago was to get one card a year in that set. And before I die, I'm going to finish the thing. So, of course, I've dialed the 9 high numbers. I've got all the low numbers now. And the Nagurski's going to kill me when I finally get down to Nagurski. But, you know, it's a goal to get one card a year in that set. So I've only got another month to strike for 2017.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So you've heard it. You've heard it on the podcast. Anybody got any spare high number 35 chickles? You got Mike's email address. You can he'll appreciate it, to say the least. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is all, Mike, are all the things you just described, are those on your on your want list that you have published? So they're all there so people can see it? Okay, great. That's great.
Yeah, they just Google Mike Rich football want list. They'll all pop up. And, you know, those are the things I'm, you know, currently looking for. Something I recently picked up that I haven't been able to even find a little catalog for was some Hall of Fame football postcards. I don't know if they came out in the 70s or whatnot. Just have to find them thrown into a little group of stuff I purchased. And so that'll be the next thing for me to start researching and throw that up
list. You're not talking about the goal line art cards, right? You're talking about the ones that the Pro Football Hall of Fame issued?
I think these were issued by the Pro Football Hall of Fame, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right. That's something I think we talked about a couple of years back, and I don't have anything on it myself. So that is a tough set to research to find out what was actually in it or not. But that's a tough one, say the least.
Yeah. And I was lucky. I just stumbled across about a small group lot of different things, and I saw them there, and I, you know, showed them to the dealer, and he just kind of threw them in the stack of five or six of them for like a buck. I was like, okay.
Wow.
you can't turn that down.
Unbelievable.
So there's always there's always new things that I'm still finding to throw out there and add to my want list. And as much as the sets get finished, new stuff still seems to go on there. It's never ending. I was recently going through the standard catalog of vintage football cards that SCD puts out, their big guide. And I kind of counted up, and I think they had like 405 sets or so listed 1980 and prior. 32 of those were Coke cap sets, which I kind of do separately. And I have, I don't know, 117 different vintage sets completed now.
Wow.
Out of what I'm figuring is, you know, the 370, 360, whatever the number is there. So only about a third of the vintage sets that are listed have I completed. A lot of the team issued stuff, you know, where you have, you know, Packer sets. I know, Bob, you love your Packers. And, you know, so the different team issued sets from there, or, you know, the Lake to Lake Packers in the 60s, which of course have some short prints I haven't picked up yet. The regional issues are always tough. You know, I'm based here in the Detroit area. And so trying to find team issued stuff from around the country, even going to the national show and whatnot, is a big challenge for a lot of us.
Unbelievable.
But so those are kind of the runs I've done. You know, the Bowman, the Flair, the Tops, the Philadelphia, the Kellogg's, the 62 Post. And I didn't stop at the border. Being in Detroit, I can actually drive south to get to Canada. One of the few anomalies here in the U.S. that can happen. So Canadian football was something I could watch on TV back before cable TV existed. So I started collecting Canadian football cards and completed the Topps Opeachy Canadian football run. So that helped add to the number as well. So those are, you know, a lot of the sets in my collection. And,
unbelievable.
You know, the inserts add to it. Now, have you guys started getting into the variations? Either of you collect variation cards?
I do some. I haven't started or tried on the 48 Leaf. I know a lot of people have. I've been working and just finished the master set for the Feltbacks, which was hard.
For which set?
The Topps 1950 Topps Feltback set.
Oh wow! Yeah.
So I just completed the two color brown yellows for the you know, the ones that are you know, different backgrounds. And, you know, a few sets I've worked on the variations, but not a lot of them. How about yourself?
Well, it's funny. You know, I'm in groups with other traders, and these guys are continuously finding more variations of stuff that was issued decades ago. And some of them are, you know, absurd, you know, the checklists have one asterisk in the copyright or two asterisks in the copyright. So even though that's absurd, I've gone after that in the 73 and 74 Topps football checklist cards and things of that nature.
You know, I see that all the time with the Flair in Action stickers, and some of the stuff to me is just like a printing issue more than anything else. I don't think it's a real variation. You know what I mean? We talked about this a long time ago. But I just can't. It's just too extreme for me to start collecting that stuff at the same time.
The one set I love for that, and I wish I had better eyesight, is the 1963 Topps football had extra red ink, although it appears to be purple to me. I'm told by experts it's actually red ink. On like every card in the set, you can find coming with or without this purplish color in the background. And you almost have to do side-by-side comparison, or if you put it under, you know, microscopes or loops, you can see the extra red dots to do it. And some of them are striking, the differences in the...
That's extreme.
You know, sometimes that's on a... There's different cards, and they look very different. So the 63 Topps football... is one of my latest challenges is just collecting them. And then I sit there side by side and try to figure out if they're different than what I already have or not.
Wow. Hey, Mike, let me ask you, put you on the spot. What are six of your most favorite items in your collection? And did you purchase them at a show, online trade them, got them at an auction? How'd you get them?
Okay. Well, among my favorites are, I have some 1948 Bowman football when I was trying to put the set together. Most of us are familiar. They came in three series, 1-4-7-10, 2-5-8-11, 3-6-9-12, so on. And the last series, the Visible by Three, is much shorter printed and whatnot. And they all end up on all our lists as the last ones we need to finish the sets. And I was searching for them, and I found some with red ink written over. Someone had taken a red pen and written over some of the numbers on the back, the card number. If you remember the set, the there's no names on the front of the cards.
Right.
It's just a black and white photo. Not knowing who the cards were I needed, I'm buying the numbers that I needed, only to find out that I bought a stack of about 20 or so wrong back 1948 Bowman football.
Wow.
The backs are the Divisible by Three series, and the fronts, I believe, are Divisible by Two series.
That's
so
pretty cool.
They're among my, they really are. So unfortunately, there is a red ink mark on the back by where the card number should be, where someone had obviously gone through and knew what the picture was on the front, and had written the card number on the back to match up.
Wow.
So it's just, I always love oddball stuff like that, and those were purchased at a show about 40 years ago. And, the real crime was when I had to go back and start replacing them to finish the set again when I realized they weren't the right card numbers.
Well,
that's frustrating, right?
Yeah.
I did that by mistake. I collected some 49s. I thought they were, they were 49s, but I thought they were 48s because I didn't look close enough. And, of course, when I thought I was finished, I realized I wasn't. And there's nothing more frustrating than when you realize you picked up the wrong card.
Very true.
Yeah, those are some of my favorite. And then something that you wouldn't think would rate up there. I've been trying to collect the 1976 or 77 RC Cola football cans.
Oh, yeah.
It's an amazing set. I wonder how many people in the country actually have a complete set of those. Because the storage capacity for a set of like 294 cans, pop cans, that's over 12 cases a pop. That takes up a lot of room.
It is.
And a lot of drinking too, right? I mean, we were drinking. I got RC Cola Religion when those came out.
A little too sweet for me. But,
it wasn't good. But.
Yeah, really. But the funny part about it is on the bottom of the cans, I'm not even going to get into the different types of cans they had with different crimpings of the steel and all that stuff. I'm not going to get that esoteric. But there's a trivia statement or a trivia question at the bottom of each can. And I'm looking at them, and all of a sudden I'm noticing there's different trivia statements for each player.
Right.
So it's
right.
not just a set of 294. I'm hoping there's only like two trivia statements for each player, but even if there's only two, it now balloons it from a 12.5 case set to a 25 case set.
How many do you have?
I only have maybe 100, 125 so far.
Oh, that's all.
Yeah. But, you know, it's really funny because you'll either find them sold individually, you know, by a dealer who'll have one or two cans and they'll want $5 or $10 for a can, or you'll find someone that has a box of 25 and they'll give you the whole box of 25 for $5 because they just don't want to carry it around anymore.
Right.
So
right.
one can's $5 or 25 cans is $5. The price doesn't change. So it's kind of funny. It's like, how much do I have to pay you to take these and store them?
yeah, really.
Because, you know, no one, you know, we're addicted to this. We can't throw anything away.
Right, right.
So, you know, so look at the extremes I'm talking here. You know, 1948 Bowman football wrong backs and then RC Cola football cans, you know, among my favorite things. You know, as for regular cards, you know, a couple of the beautiful sets that I've always loved was the 55 Tops All-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still a college set. Tops hadn't switched to the NFL yet, the pro players. Whereas the Bowman cards that have been coming out were all pros for all those years. So that was a nice contrast between the college and the pros being issued at the same time. But there's just so many great names and pictures in the Topps All-American set. It's one of my favorite sets. The Bowman, the beautiful set to me is the 53 Bowman set.
Mm.
The color photos are just striking and, you know, chock full of Hall of Famers. And being from Detroit, Detroit actually had football team, a professional team. In the 50s, that was a championship team, and it had a bunch of those guys that, in my lifetime, I'm only 56 years old. I believe the Lions have won one playoff game in my lifetime.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
wow.
That's worse than Cleveland, guys. it's difficult. It's difficult being a Lions fan, I got to tell you. So for me to get the guys in the 50s, when we actually won a championship with Bobby Lane in 57,
Joe Schmidt,
our last championship, is really something special. So I love the Bowman football. Just thinking those are really some sharp, sharp cards.
That's great stuff. Do you you mentioned some of your collecting goals? You're trying to get a tickle a year. You're finishing up your 1950 tops. You know, where are you headed with your runs and your sets? Do you have other things that you're really trying to focus on finishing, or that you're starting to move into now?
Yeah, I had gotten big time into the Coke football caps of the 60s. Most people know them from 64 to 66. There was a Packer set. Bob, do you have that, the 71 Packers?
I got the 71 Packers set, and I got most of the mid-60s ones, but I am missing a handful from those.
Right. So those are great. And there's actually a 63 Chargers set that a lot of people don't even know exists. But at one time, I thought I was one of the leading guys on those, but I'm finding out there's a number of guys out there that have really gone after those. And they're a lot of fun because you can still pick those up for a couple dollars a piece. I don't know how familiar you are with the sets, but the bulk of them, they issued them regionally. So for the Packers, they were issued in Wisconsin, and 1 through 36 are the Packers, and 37 through 70 were NFL All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Detroit, 1 through 36 were the Lions, and 37 mm-hmm. through 70 were the NFL All-Stars, the same All-Stars. So the All-Stars were issued in Green Bay, in Detroit, in Minnesota, in Pittsburgh, in Cleveland. So the All-Stars are the commons because they're issued in every city, whereas the local team was only issued in that regional city. So, it, again, you know, what I was talking about, the team-issued stuff gets to be very tough to finish off. Being in the Midwest, I can't get the Houston Oilers to save my life. the AFL wasn't printed as much as the NFL, except for maybe the Patriots and the Jets. But the Oilers, the Raiders, very tough. The Rams, the 49ers, the Cowboys, very tough to get for me over here. You know, I can find the Bears and the Vikings and the Packers and the Browns here in the Midwest, but those other teams. But the CoCaps, again, for those that like follow a team, that's really something they should look at because, mm-hmm. so let's face it, the top set or the Flair set or Philadelphia sets in the 60s, you know, Philadelphia's 200 sets for, what, 12 or 14 teams. There's maybe 14 guys per set, per team, versus 36 mm-hmm. Coke caps. So you get mm-hmm. a lot more players who may never have appeared on a card who are in these sets. So they're really
That's
neat
true.
Sets. And they're only a couple dollars a cap.
Yeah.
So I think that's a real fun thing to collect, especially for those of us on budgets. And they're out there to be found.
And they're fun collectible, too. I mean, they look cool.
Yeah.
I mean, and for us older guys, we remember them. You know, I remember them when I was a kid. I used to save them. And that's a real fun collectible, to say the least. I got to ask you a question,
yeah.
too.
Sure.
As far as the hobby, what do you see the hobby in the future? What's changing? Is it getting better, getting worse? What do you think?
Well, I found the conversation you and Jeff was having about the pricing of the Hall of Fame rookie cards fascinating. The graded, you know, rookie cards, Hall of Famers, et cetera, from an investment perspective, will probably be there. My big concern is we're not getting younger people into the hobby. There's a whole bunch of guys in their 50s, you know, maybe 40, late 40s, early 60s, the baby boom generation that collected. But the young guys don't collect. And when we finally decide to start selling our collections, I wonder if anyone's going to be around to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
So that
well, particularly the
well.
Sets, right? I mean, you're a set
yeah.
collector. I'm a set collector. Bob's a set collector. There seems to be a huge move kind of away from sets. The commons are, I know in baseball, for instance, they're just plummeting. They're even
yep.
graded commons. I mean, I hear what you're saying there.
Well,
and,
that's why,
so
you know, again, that's why, again, I've tried for many years now to say that we really need to bring more people into the hobby, because exactly what you said, Mike, you know, as we get older, are we going to still be in our 80s going to the National and saying, oh, all right, did you get your chicle, you know, this year type of thing, or, you know, whatever. You know, we got to be realistic about this. You know, I'm going to be 60 next year, and, you know, how many more years am I going to theoretically collect? Probably, I'm still going to keep collecting, but at the same time, too, you know, am I going to keep my entire run, you know, not counting all the inventory I got of everything. And don't even get me started on my publications, you know what I mean? So it's a valid point, and it's a valid issue. And I kind of wish the hobby would get together a little more closely and look at it. And again, something I've harped on in the magazine and on the show several times. We go to a national, look at all the box breaking, where people stand around and try to get one card out of a box that's supposed to be red hot or whatever. And what are they going to do with it? That's what I like to know. You know?
Yeah.
And
well,
that, to
and
me...
The worst part is, yeah, I was going to say, the worst part about those box breaks is everything else other than, you know, that one or two magic cards they're trying to find, you know, the DNA short printed one of one or whatever, is just garbage. They almost leave it there. They have no interest
in
it.
They do leave it there a lot of times.
And
yeah.
It just breaks my heart, you know?
Yep. I mean, there's kids in children's hospitals that would love to have those cards. Don't throw it in the garbage pail. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, that really bothers me. That really bothers me, to say the least.
You know, you talk about the children's hospitals. I got to put a plug in, especially as we're heading into the holiday season. There's a lot of the VA hospitals. There's a lot of guys that have cards. You know, from that dead period of, 86 to 92 or whatever, or maybe even more recently, that the cards are, you use them as fireplace logs, except for they give off toxic fumes. They love that kind of stuff at VA hospitals for guys for the rehab while they're there. So, the hospitals are a great place to donate cards that you just don't want to store anymore.
Mm-hmm. So I agree.
Just want to put that kind of plug in. All right. So my concern for the future of the hobby is that, you know, who's going to be there to, you know, still want the stuff in 20, 30 years?
Right.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Okay. You got anything else for me here, Bobby?
Jeff has one more question, and then I'm going to wrap it up.
Yeah, so interested in any collecting stories that you could share. Do you have a specific story of interest for something that happened while you were collecting that you found interesting or amusing during your collecting journey?
Well, I was mentioning the Coke caps earlier. God, this had to be, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago. Someone who wrote an article for the SCD magazine got my name and number somehow, and unbeknownst to me, wrote an article about Coke football caps in the SCD and put my name and number out there as a big collector of them. And the magazine happened to hit the day I had some minor surgery, and I'm brought home from the hospital, half on drugs, you know, knocked out, and my phone rang all day long.
Wow.
With people thinking I would sell Coke cap. It was like all of a sudden, you know, my name is out there. I am the Coke cap expert. And any question? And they all wanted to buy my Coke caps, and I don't sell. I'm a collector. It's like, I'm happy to trade with you, especially if you're in another city, you know. I've got the ones in the Midwest I'll send to you for ones out in your area. And so that was one of the funniest ones. Was I remember it's like, okay, I hope I did just promise the same thing to six different people because I am so drugged up. I have no idea what to
do. Oh, brother. I remember you telling me that story, and I remember when that article broke, too, and I'm saying, why did he put his name and phone number?
Yeah, really.
Good grief.
Yeah.
That's an unwritten rule of the hobby. You don't, you always go through the magazine or whatever type of thing. Wow.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
I had no knowledge of it ahead of time. It was just a complete, you know,
blindside
on that one.
Unbelievable. Mike, wrapping this up, final comments. Any advice for somebody who wants to get into collecting football cards and/or football memorabilia? You're a super collector. You've been in the hobby for years. What's your advice, if any?
I don't like price guides because we lose sight of it as being a hobby and for fun. Find something that you really like. My story of the 65 Tops football, that being the tall boys being odd, you know, really drew me to them, or the Coke football caps, a different type of thing. So find something you really enjoy yourself. And if you like it, then it's worth buying. And don't worry about the price guides or how am I going to triple my money in the next 6 hours on these cards. It's meant to be a hobby. Enjoy the hobby.
And with those final words, enjoy the hobby. Mike, thank you for being on tonight. It was great talking. Your collection, as far as I'm concerned, is right up there with many other super collector collections. And to me, you're a true hobbyist because, as you say, you're not worried about the price guide. And you remember when the hobby was fun. And as much as I remember, go back many, many years with the hobby, to say the least. That's Mike Rich. Thanks, Mike, for being on.
Thank you, Mike.
Appreciate it.
Thank
you,
guys.
And we'll be in touch soon. You're welcome.
Happy holidays.
I just want to – you too. Happy Thanksgiving. And just wrapping things up, I want to remind everybody we're sponsored in part by MSB Sports Cards. Check out their website for a large selection of football cards and memorabilia on the web, msbsportscards.com. And by BST Auctions, check out their website, bstauctions.com, and make sure you register for their next auction. Jeff, incredible two shows with you. And, again, listening to Mike brought back a lot of memories for me when the hobby was very, very small. And I go back to something I've said many, many times on the show. I used to go to card shows in the 70s and early 80s, and I would have dealers pull out these cheese boxes and shove them in my hand for $5 and get out of my table because I'm selling baseball cards, and they are the hottest thing. I remember going to Chaps and saying, why are you collecting football cards? They're worthless.
Right.
They'll never be like baseball cards. Yada, 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 yada. On and on and on.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I wish I was there with you, Bob. That would have been fun. You know, Mike, as you mentioned, he's what the hobby's all about. I mean, he's focused on eye appeal over grade. He's trading with others. He's putting sets together. He's just having fun. He's enjoying the hobby and collecting experience. He's enjoying meeting other people, and that's really what it's all about.
It is. It is. And I'll tell you, at the National, Mike gives me a good uplift when I start talking to him because, again, after grinding it out with a bunch of, people nickel and diming me at the table or whatever, or, you know, talking about the magazine, whatever the case may be, Mike lets me refocus and get back to my roots, too, which is being a collector at heart at the same time. Well, we're almost out of time again. We're sponsored by MSB Sports Cards, msbsportscards.com, and BST Auctions. Check out their website, bstauctions.com. Jeff, any final thoughts, any final words before we're going to wrap it up?
No, just I did one note on the hobbies or on the auctions we didn't get to talk about was there were a couple of modern cards that did very well in both Heritage, which ended recently, and also BST. So, you know, there is a market out there for some of those rookies. For the modern stuff, somebody is picking that stuff up.
Yep, I agree with that. I mean, there is a market for the modern stuff, and there are people collecting it. I just hope they can go back to collecting sets. I think that's very important, or team sets at least. But you know, these guys with these you're not going to have a super collection of one or two cards. I don't care what anybody says. That's not what the hobby is about. It doesn't make any sense, you know. All right, we're almost out of time. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with the next show probably in 2 weeks, and we'll be posting who will be on in the future. Jeff, again, thank you very much for being my guest co-host. We will be in touch.
Hey, it's been fun,
Bob.
Help. Thanks very much for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for being on. I appreciate it. That's it for tonight. Thanks for listening. And again, check out Gridiron Greats Magazine website. If you're not a subscriber, check it out and become a subscriber. GridironGreatsMagazine.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.